Well, Howard, here we are. We're in Quo Vadis, a restaurant in the middle of Formby. This is very much home for you these days, isn't it, this village here?
You know, I stayed here when I played for Everton and when I was managing Everton, and I always loved it. And I thought, well, whenever, you know, I do finish playing or managing, then this is the place I want to be.
Let's turn the clock right back to the start of your career, because you were with Preston North End. You turned professional in 1963, and famously, of course, you became the youngest ever player to appear in an FA Cup final against West Ham. What do you remember of those early days then, when you first started? Because you were only a teenager then, weren't you?
Well, I remember the scout of Preston really became a family friend in the North East, and my family, my parents decided that, we've got to give them a go, and we went down to Preston, and it was faultless. It was absolutely faultless. And my father said to me that day, he said, when I signed, he said, if you sign professional terms, then we'll come down and look after you, because I was in digs. And if you make it, lad, because they'd just gone down from 2 to 3. That was the old 1, 2, 3, you know. If you make it, the big ones will come for you. So give it a go. I signed a professional contract, and they came down. Preston North End were absolutely superb. I mean, we had a rented house there, and my parents looked after me. When you look back on it...
That's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when you look back on it, I had family in the northeast and friends in the northeast, and they came back to look after me, and I'll never forget that.
The manager at the time was Jimmy Milne. What was he like to play under?
Well, I mean, in those days, really, I mean, I don't think the managers were high profile. You know, we had a physio who was... I don't know whether he was qualified or not, but I mean, you know, on a Friday before a Saturday game, I mean, as an apprentice, we cleaned the tunnel, we cleaned the bathrooms, we polished up the floor in the treatment room, and that was part and parcel of an apprenticeship. In the summer, we used to paint the barriers, and in the ground, and I think that was a good upbringing. Actually, I think that the youngsters of this day are a little bit spoiled.
I think
we were more hungry then.
Do you think they get too much too soon these days?
I think they're mollycoddled, yeah. I think they get, well, actually, I mean, you know, if you've got an outstanding youngster, I mean, most clubs want you. And they persuade the parents through financial means or whatever. But, I mean, I don't think it did me any harm. You know, going in there in the summer and painting berries on Friday afternoons before I was actually a player, realising, you know, hey, this is the other part of it.
Just in the build-up to the FA Cup final itself, you did, of course, play quite a lot of games, didn't you? You played in one particular FA Cup tie where you scored the winning goal in a replay.
That was against Nottingham Forest, yeah. Peter Grummet was the goalkeeper. I always remember it. There was a snow-covered pitch, and... I hit this one from just outside the area, and I went in the corner, and, well, I mean, the headlines were there the next day. I didn't expect that. It was a great moment. I mean, I hadn't played in the first game at Forest, and I wasn't a regular in the team.
So Ian Davidson was disciplined by the club, and that's how you got your opportunity in the FA Cup final side, wasn't it?
Yeah, but in a way, you know. I mean, you know, going into management later, I think that was a harsh punishment. Really, I mean, I played because he'd made an excuse to go to Scotland for some reason or other, and I'd played the week before. And for him to be banned from the cup final or suspended from the cup final, I thought that was a little harsh. And looking back on it, I think it was very, very harsh. And I think that possibly Jimmy Milne wanted to select me. I really do. And, well, thankfully so.
What do you remember about the day itself, the final?
I was a distraction, really, because all the attention was on myself. And the players themselves, Alan Spavin and Nobby Lawton, the skipper, they were all conscious of the fact that I would be relaxed on the day. And so it took the pressure off them a little bit. And we went to this hotel and the big build-up and whatever. And... No, I was quite relaxed, really. You know, the plan was, when the whistle goes, the ball will go back to me. have a first touch on it, and it went whizzing past me. You know, so you know that really calmed me. But I was all right.
What did you take from that build up on the day into perhaps later, you know, moving 20 years on to when you guided Everton to three successive FA Cup finals? I mean, there's talk on the first one of strippograms and all sorts of things going on in the hotel the night before or the day before even. What did you learn from that first experience as a player to take on into management?
I learned it was a special day. I think it's a special day for the fans. I always remember going back into Preston and the town hall and I always remember going back on the train and people with banners and scarves and waving at the train because they knew we were on there. I thought, hang on, what are they doing? We've lost. And it was incredible. But it was possibly because we put up a tremendous show and only lost in the last minute. And we were a second division side and they were a first division side.
And you look at some of the players that they had out there that day, Bobby Moore, Jeff Hurst playing for them, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were a great side. I mean, I've always been a fan of West Ham. You know, the way that they've played and the great players that they brought through. I was just grateful it didn't go to extra time because I was absolutely shattered.
Howard Kendall. As a player in the early to mid-1960s, he was part of a Preston North End team that was packed with characters.
Well, I mean, you can go through the team. I mean, it was a fantastic team. I mean, I appointed Alan Kelly as a goalkeeping coach for Everton because I'd rated him so highly. Sadly, a few of the names have gone. I mean, but they were tremendous characters and it was a great side.
And Dougie Holden, you actually saw him play in the 58 Cup final.
I did. My father was very lucky to get a couple of tickets. He was playing amateur football in the northeast, and he was lucky enough to get a couple of tickets. And we went down to the 58 Cup final. It was just after the Munich air disaster, and Dougie was actually playing in that particular game. And then it turned out 6 years later, he was, you know, I was in the same side as him playing another cup final.
You then moved on to Everton. Everton came in with a bid of £85,000 in March 1967. Just tell us the circumstances in which you made that switch.
Well, I think I'd had another couple of years at Preston and there was a lot of interest, especially from Liverpool, to be honest. And, you know, weekly stories about me going to Liverpool. And
so you could have been a Red.
Well, yeah, I mean, Peter Thompson and you know, Gordon Milne, Davy Wilson, they'd all gone there. And I think that possibly Preston were looking and saying, well, no, we're not an academy where we're bringing players through to sell them to Liverpool. And I asked for a transfer because I wanted to play at the highest level. And I was granted that. And then I was a knock on the door and it was Jimmy Milne, the manager, and my father answered the door and he said, yes. Jimmy Milne said, we've got a club for your son. And he said, Liverpool, immediately. And he went, no, it's across the road. He said, I've got Harry Catrick and Harry Coop, who was the chief scout at the time, waiting at Deepdale, waiting to talk to you. Oh, fine. So we went down there, had a chat. And I was threatened in a little way. I think that Preston were playing down at Bournemouth or somewhere like that the day after, and it was a deadline day. And I said, do you want to sign for Everton or do you want to go to Bournemouth? You know. And I said, well, you know, my father said, anyone else interested? And I said, well, Tottenham, but you don't want to go there, do you? No. And then all of a sudden, we went back home. We agreed to go to the training ground at Everton the next day to discuss the transfer. And then a knock on the door, and it was Alan Ball's father. And he was working for Stoke City. And he insisted on us going to a house in Preston to talk it over The funny story is, really, that my father said, your son is playing for Everton. Why are you trying to convince my son to go to Stoke. And Alan Ball Sr. said, I assure you, Alan Ball will be playing for Stoke next year. I mean, absolute load of rubbish. But yeah. I mean, but trying to convince me to, you know, or try to convince my dad. My dad was spot on, actually, with everything. He was spot on with everything. I've got a lot to be thankful for.
Indeed. And you were moved from left half into midfield. How did you feel about that? Who suggested that?
No. There were systems, really. I mean, Jimmy Milne actually tried me up the front on one occasion. That failed. I think Harry Kattrick was a tremendous manager, and he had Colin Harvey coming through the ranks. He bought Alan Ball after the World Cup final.
From Blackpool, of course.
Yeah. And myself on the right-hand side. And he was way ahead of his time, I think, in terms of a system of playing. But, I mean, Brian LeBone used to say, the late Brian, I mean, absolutely fantastic person, captain and whatever. Mm. He used to come in raging on a Monday morning, you know, after we won the game, and he said, we're the only team that's won the championship with three players. Kendall, Harvey and Ball, like, you know. And the other players didn't get any credit in the media or as much as they should have had. We had Gordon West, we had Ray Wilson had won a World Cup winners medal. You know, Tommy Wright, England International. I mean, but Joe Royal, you know. But it just so happened that we gelled in that midfield, and that's down to Harry Kattrick, really.
You were known as the Holy Trinity, weren't you, the three of you?
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that phrase plenty of times.
Yes, of course, yeah. I mean, it's a compliment, and unfortunately Alan's not with us.
Yeah.
But we get together, Colin and myself, as much as we can.
I'm sure another question that you've been asked umpteen times was, the team that you played in, which of course won the championship, didn't you, in the late 60s, 69-70 season, was that better than the one that you managed to the league title twice in the 80s, albeit two different teams in the 80s?
Oh, I mean, Gordon West has a lovely story, really. He said, you know, he's always asked the question, who's the best goalkeeper, Neville Southall or Gordon West? And he said, me in the 60s, Neville in the 70s, 80s, which I think is the perfect answer, really. Because you could not. I mean, they were absolutely fantastic players. And you wouldn't like to think, you know, in terms of selection, who you'd leave out, who you'd put in. No.
We got to play fantasy football, Howard, and actually link up those two sides. And you could put Peter Reid and Neville Southall in there and Andy Gray up front and mix that with the three of you in midfield, if you were able to do that.
Not now. No. Yeah, fantasy football. I don't know about that. Yeah. No, I was a manager of the real thing.
Howard Kendall, remembering his days at Goodison Park as player and manager. His first proper taste of management came in 1979 when he was appointed player boss at Blackburn Rovers. I asked him what Ewood Park was like back then.
Well, I mean, they were in financial difficulty. The ground wasn't good. I mean, they were working on ways of saving money. I remember an old director called Arthur Friars, you know, at a board meeting, and chairman at the time, David Brown, said, we need to reduce the wage bill. And Arthur Fryer says, well, I've got an idea. Why don't we send out second-class stamps instead of first-class stamps? And he said, by the way, he says, I walked down the corridor yesterday and there was a couple of bottles of milk there from the day before. We must reduce on the milk. and then Jack Walker took over and it was totally different. But, I mean, that's the way it was. I mean, that's just an idea of how it was. There was no training ground.
So where did you train? Because later it was at Pleasington on the playing fields, wasn't it?
We pinched places, you know. I mean, you know, in the middle of winter, you had to hire indoor places, you know, and things like that. I mean, when you went into training in the morning, you didn't know where you were going to train. We had to find somewhere, you know. And when you think about the situation now, it's totally different.
That must have been quite difficult for you coming into that situation as a novice manager, having to deal, you know, you were fairly new to it back then, weren't you? And you were still playing, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I was a player coach at Stoke before. Yeah. So really had an insight into management. And I enjoyed the playing side of it, and I still want to continue the playing side of it. We got promoted to the first division at Stoke under Alan Durbin. And he said to me, maybe you're not going to be playing as many games. And I thought, well, I'll have to drop a level then because I want to keep on playing. And Blackburn came in. Jimmy Armfield was instrumental, really. And he'd recommended me. I think it was Ken Knighton at Sunderland who was also in the running. But I wanted to continue playing. I kept my player's contract, and I felt it great, really, to be out on the field after working with them, helping them on the field. It took a little while, because if things weren't going well, they'd turn around and say, hey, boss, you put it right. But I'm on the field with them. I'm a player. You know, it was great. I mean, promotion in the first season, you know. And then just failing, you know, that was a sad one. You know, I mean, Preston come into it again, don't they? Because they lost at home to Swansea. And we won away at Bristol Rovers and we'd have gone up. But I knew I was going to Everton then. But I would have loved to have left Blackburn Rovers in the first division. It was goal difference, yeah, and it really was. All we could do was go to Bristol Rovers and win. We didn't know what was going to happen at Preston, but it was. I think that the big problem was I tried to sign Brian Marwood from Hull City before the deadline, and Mike Smith, the ex-Wales manager, wanted £30,000, and my chairman said we can only go to 29. And we failed on deadline day to sign Brian Marwood, who turned out to be a first-class player. And the game after, on the Saturday, we lost Noel Brotherston, the late Noel Brotherston, with an injury for the rest of the season. You know, and I think that day, that deadline day, could have made the difference, maybe got us promoted.
There were some colourful characters in that team, of course. I've got to ask you about Simon Garner. I know perhaps you didn't always see eye to eye with him.
No, I
is that right?
Yeah, Simon will tell you that. I always think that there's certain players that you can get more from, and I always thought that you should give more, or the player should give more. But you can't take his goal scoring record away from him. Absolutely superb. Maybe he was just lazing about in the penalty area, I don't know, you know.
And of course, he was quite a heavy smoker, wasn't he? Did you try and clamp down on that, or did you just let him get on with it? Basically,
oh, no, you
different
can't.
Era.
Yeah, it is a different era. You can't do things like that. I mean, I remember, you know, Duncan McKenzie. He didn't need an ashtray. He was just stumping him out the back of the bus playing cards. So I mean, you know, you tell him to clean it up, but I mean, you can't stop them.
There were some great leaders, Tony Parks, Derek Fazakerley, two people who've gone on to have tremendous careers in coaching as well as play.
Well, I mean, the first thing that my chairman said, I mean, unfortunately, Derek Keithley, the chairman who appointed me, died shortly afterwards. David Brown, who took over, absolutely unbelievable chairman, by the way, said we must keep Derek. I don't think Tony was an issue at the time. Tony was devoted to the club, but I think there was a lot of clubs looking at Derek, and the chairman said, "Well, we've got to keep him. He's part of Blackburn Rovers," and I think that is the way that the chairman was. It was Blackburn Rovers, and it was a pleasure to work for him.
Still to come on Sport Tonight, Howard Kendall's glorious return to Everton as manager, which was a real struggle to start with, plus his days at Manchester City when he was in the running for the England job.
Peter Swales, I was at Man City at the time. I'd just come back from Spain and I'd really wanted club management, and Peter Swales gave me that opportunity at Man City. And he was on the FA committee, and he called me in one morning and said, you're on the shortlist, but you don't want it, do you? I said, what shortlist?
We've already heard about his days at Preston and Blackburn. I asked him how he remembers his departure from Ewood in 1981 to rejoin Everton, this time as manager.
I think Gordon Lee was having a bad time at Everton, and David Brown had contact with Philip Carter, who was the chairman of Everton, and they were looking to replace him, and he wanted permission to talk to me. He did say, David Brown, he said, why don't you have another one or two here and then move on? And I said, well, you're not guaranteed that you'll get that offer to go back to a club where you've had so many successful years.
Where you were idolised, basically, by the fans, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe they bring someone in and I don't do too well at Blackburn. Someone does well at Everton, and I don't get that opportunity, and I had to take it.
And how tough was it trying to meet people's expectations? Because they could see Howard Kendall, the player, the midfield star that helps us win the title. What was it like being a manager? You must have been under a different kind of pressure right from the word go.
Well, I mean, the thing was, they'd finished about fifth bottom, and that's the reason why they sacked Gordon Lee. So, I mean, you knew you had a difficult job to do. And I always believed that the first job was to go into the transfer market and be successful in the transfer market. I tried to get Brian Robson from West Brom. Ron Atkinson, for some reason or other, didn't want to sell him to me.
Wonder why.
Well, he took him to Man United, didn't he? So I then started looking at the squad of players, and it was unbalanced. You know, you'd have five centre-halves and maybe one wide left player, you know, and six midfield players. And you know, I just tried to balance it out. And you know, I made a lot of changes very early. My first signing was Neville Southall, and he became my best signing.
From Bury?
From Bury, but I watched him at Winsford United in the Cheshire League. I had a tip-off from a mate of mine in Llandudno, where he lived. Go and have a look at him. And I went to have a look at him. And Blackburn, at that particular time, had two goalkeepers. One I took to Evan, Jim Arnold, who was a great goalkeeper. And when I went to Evan, I mean, it was £8,000 he went to Bury. And when I went to Evan, when I needed a goalkeeper, he was my first signing. And it was £150,000. But, I mean, when you look at the service that he gave, I mean, he became the best goalkeeper in the world for me.
I think a lot of people would agree with you. And of course, you went to Liverpool, you signed Kevin Sheedy, Alan Harper, Trevor Stephen from Burnley during that first period, didn't you?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that that was the only one in for Trevor Stephen. He was absolutely brilliant. I remember talking to Bob Paisley after we won the championship, and he was in the boardroom at Everton, and he said, you were right about Stephen. And I said, well, I didn't have any doubts. And he said, well, every time I went to see him, he never finished a game. But Trevor had this little touch to go past people. And players lower down who were slower would probably be catching him. And it was so lucky for me that Bob went on the wrong games.
And, of course, you signed Peter Reid from Bolton. Just tell us the story behind that, because Everton were linked with him for quite a while, I think probably before you arrived on the scene, and he got very badly injured in a game, ironically, for Bolton against Everton when he was in collision with George Ward, and the game was abandoned at half-time because of snow, but it was a long time out of the game, and yet you came back in for him.
Well, when I was playing for Stoke, I mean, I played against Reedy, and I was up against him, and I thought, what a good player. And naturally followed his progress, and unfortunately he had this injury. When I moved to Everton, then he came back into the Bolton side, recovering from the injury. And I did send Colin Harvey to watch the Bolton game when he came back. And Colin came back to me with a report that best player on the field. And I said, that's enough for me. So we contacted Bolton. I think Sheffield Wednesday were interested. Jackie Charlton was the manager there at the time. They were interested. We agreed a fee of £60,000. Then I went to my chairman And he went, what, £60,000? You have to leave it with us. So came back the next day and he said, yeah, that's all right. And they moved banks from the Midland Bank to the TSB Bank. And they gave the £60,000.
Because the Midland Bank wouldn't give you the 60, presumably, is that right?
No, they wouldn't give the club £60,000. It was a risk. It was like an Andy Gray signing, really. I mean, they'd both had injuries in the past, but I mean, there were risk signings which turned out absolutely superbly.
You must have felt at that time that everything you touched turned to gold, effectively.
No, not
I mean,
really.
There must have been some signings that didn't work for you.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, you're not successful with all your signings, but I mean, fortunately enough, most of them were right, and. I take it on Harry Kettrick, really, the balance was perfect. Because Kevin Sheedy, I mean, if you look at video coverage of the successful times that we had and the times he was involved with goals or making goals, I mean, was absolutely superb.
His crossing ability was second to none, wasn't it?
Oh, the left foot was like a... Well, outgoal Liam Brady... Something like that, you know. I mean, I always had a great respect of Liam Brady, and I think Kevin Sheedy was up there with him.
84-85 was just a sensational year, wasn't it? You won the FA Cup, league champions, and it always seemed to be around that era. It always seemed to be Everton and Liverpool that were vying for honours, and they outdid you on a couple of occasions. You outdid them on a couple of occasions. That must have been fantastic for the city of Liverpool at that time.
Yeah, I mean the objective when I took over. I mean, Liverpool were dominant, really. And people said, well, what's your objective, you know? And I said, well, to catch up with Liverpool and then hopefully overtake.
And what did people say? We did that. What was their response when you said that?
No, there was no response because I wouldn't listen to it. You know, all I was concentrating on was trying to do it. And we did it. It's a totally different situation to the present day because, you know, you could say... middle of the table team. Well, I'm going to be better than Man United. I want to, you know, Man City have done it with money, but we did it without money.
And when you sold players like Andy Gray, you brought in players that were just as good, if not better, like Gary Lineker, who scored 30 goals in one season for you.
Yeah, I think Gary, naturally a great player, but I mean, a great goal scorer. But I did feel that. Our way of playing was different. Suddenly, Trevor Stephen wasn't scoring goals, Sheedy wasn't scoring goals, no one was scoring goals. We had five players in double figures when we won the championship. Lineker came in, all right, individually, he did it. He was absolutely superb. But it was affecting the other team, the other players in the team. And I did feel that we were losing out on something, the way that we were playing. We won the league the year after, that's my answer.
With a quite different-looking team. I mean, there were some stalwarts still in that side, but you'd filled around the edges and brought other people in like Lineker, hadn't you? And yet you still managed to win the league. That must have been one of your greatest ever achievements.
It was, really, because, you know, to win it again, I mean, I was wanting to match Kettrick in terms of two championships with two really different teams. Which he did, and you know, we did that.
There's one final issue on Everton. I know it's a really emotive issue, and that was what happened at Heysel. Meant that English clubs were banned from Europe, and of course you weren't able to go into Europe. That must have been a painful experience for you, without apportioning any sort of blame to anybody or about what happened.
I do honestly think that you know, the players believed, I think the fans believed after the European Cup Winners' Cup win, that we were the best in Europe, and we weren't able to be tested on that. And I think that was a massive disappointment, especially when, you know, your neighbours are involved. Whether it was right for the country, whether it was right for... I don't know. But it was a disappointment for Everton Football Club, that happened, because we believed we were the best.
And I've read somewhere that you believe that when English clubs were allowed back in Europe, Everton should automatically have been given a chance to see what they can do.
Yeah, I think whatever position that they were on the table when the ban was lifted, I think that they should have been allowed back into Europe because they were denied that. And maybe, I don't know whether Everton fought enough to bring that to rights or whatever, I don't know. But I honestly believe that that should have been the case.
You were late.
And I wasn't there.
You'd moved on by that point.
I'd moved on. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, I mean, that was for the fans and the club.
He was never quite finished with Everton and returned as manager on two more occasions, as we're about to hear. He also had a successful spell at Manchester City between 1989 and 1990, when there was talk of him taking the England job.
Peter Swales, I was at Man City at the time. I'd just come back from Spain and I'd really wanted club management. And Peter Swales gave me that opportunity at Man City. And he was on the FA committee, and he called me in one morning and said, you're on the shortlist, but you don't want it, do you? I said, what shortlist? And he said, England job, but you don't want it, do you? I said, who's on the shortlist? He said, oh, Graham Taylor, but he's going to get it. You don't want to go to London, do you? I went, no, all right then. So that was it. The chairman of the FA convincing me that I stay in Man City. No, but I'd been in Spain for 2.5 years.
That was Athletic Bilbao,
yes,
I beg your pardon.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And fantastic club. Really, really enjoyed it. When I came back to Man City, I think I was too young for international football, you know. I think
you were experienced, though, Howard. By then, you were really experienced.
Yeah, but I was wanting to come back into English football, day to day involvement with the players, because I loved that. Whereas international football, you don't get that. You know, you're meeting up every so often, and I think I'm about the age now where I would take it
if they offered it. To you next week, then. Capello standing down, you'd take it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Then pick the wrong team like he's doing and get a payoff.
You had two more spells at Everton. The last time being the season you survived on the final day against Coventry when Gareth Farrelly scored what was quite a spectacular goal to kick you up. What was that like that day?
I woke up in the middle of the night and selected him. He wasn't in the team, you know, the night before. And I thought, you know, the lad had so much potential. Oh, it was nerve-wracking. I mean, Bolton were away at Chelsea, and naturally you're keeping in touch with those, you know, the scores there and whatever, but fortunately enough, Chelsea won, and, well, a bit ironic, really, if Dion Dublin had sealed our fate, because I'd gone from Everton because of that, because the board of directors wouldn't sanction the deal from Man United with that player.
And it was a strange old season because on the opening day you went to Bolton, you were the first team ever to play at the Reebok, weren't you? And there was an alleged goal that went in that never crossed the line, or did it cross the line for Bolton, which would have kept them up at your expense.
No, the referee was spot on, and the linesman.
After that, of course, you moved.
And there was a foul on the goalkeeper, by the way, at the same time.
I can't even remember who scored it. Or didn't
no,
score it.
No, didn't score it.
Didn't score
hang
it.
On.
And the referee blows his whistle, and Everton stay in the Premiership. Bolton have lost at Stamford Bridge. It's a 1-1 draw here at Goodison Park. There is, of course, the invasion, but Hard Kendall is also invading the pitch. He's embracing his players out there, and there is masked relief on Merseyside.
I was born in the North East, I mean, but at the same time, I spent most of my time down in this area. And it's very nice.
You've been out of management now, I think it's about 12 years, Howard. Do you miss it?
You miss certain points of it. You miss the involvement with the players, the day-to-day banter with the players, and you miss the wage going into the bank account. But I don't miss the other side of it, you know, the hassle and the prayer. It's a 24-hour-a-day job. Really, and I know managers are well paid these days. No, I felt that I'd done enough.
What was it in particular that really started to annoy you latterly, maybe?
I don't know. You can't be as successful as you were because of finances. Mm.
these days it seems that chairmen are very, very quick to press the eject button, aren't they? They could have done with you, couldn't they, in theory?
Oh, yeah, they could have done. But, I mean, you know, it wouldn't have cost them as much to sack me as it would cost people today. But, I mean, it doesn't seem to matter. If you're appointing a manager, then you've got to give him time. But, I mean, at the top level now, I mean, I think the people are providing the money and wanting immediate success. But, I mean, you know, there's only one winner, two winners. You can't guarantee it, however much you spend.
Which aspect of management did you get the biggest buzz from? Was it just the match day experience, the joy of winning?
No, that was the day-to-day with the players, without a doubt. I mean, naturally, the buzz of winning is important, I mean, as much as the disappointment of losing. I mean, I had Colin Harvey as my assistant and the late Mick Heaton. I mean, he was with me as well. We were out there with them. And I always remember we went down to Lillishaw when the ban of going to Europe was involved after the Heysel tragedy. And we went down to Lillishaw and the director of coaching was doing a course at the other side. And he came down and said, look at those. They're doing it all wrong to the course. Because we were involved with the players and teaching the players within. He said they should be outside, giving them information from the outside. They're doing it all wrong. We won the league that year.
Shows what they know.
Yeah.
There was one quote from you, famously. You said that you can have love affairs with other football clubs, but for me, with Everton, it's a marriage. Do you still feel like that, Howard, a little bit? Because I know you go and watch the games every week, don't you?
I came out with that one, you know, and it was headlined, you know, when I went back there. And it was from Man City to Everton. And I do feel that way. I mean, I didn't think there was any other way of putting it, really, how much I was disappointed in leaving Man City because things were going well, you know. But the pull of Everton was too great to be offered the opportunity to go back. And I just felt, well, yeah, I've had a little bit of time there, it's a love affair. And then, but this is... And people made a lot of that, you know, but I thought that was a way of putting it.
Was it heart ruling head or head ruling heart, was it, with the Everton heart. Situation? Heart.
Heart, really. Yeah, because, I mean, things were going well at Man City. You know, I mean, looking back on it, football-wise, maybe I should have stayed a little bit longer there.
Because you just had that 3-3 draw with Man United, hadn't you, at the time?
Yeah, we were 3-1 up as well. You were flying high. 3-1 up as well. I took Peter Reid off and then they scored two. I was saving him for the Monday. There was two games Saturday, Monday. I thought, oh, no. He's like, I even put the pitch in for him. You know, the touchline. I even tucked it in a little bit for him, you know. He was a great character.
You remain, of course, the last English manager to win a European competition with an English club. How different is the game now, finally, to what it was back then?
Oh, it's totally different. I mean, the pitches are different. I mean, the style of play is different. I mean, I sometimes get bored with it, in all fairness. Players are ultra safe with, you know, with their passing. And I don't agree with Route 1, but I think there's a middle, you know, where you can, you know, you go through the middle rather than going back and back and square and square. And I don't like that play. I don't like watching it.
Is it less skillful or more skillful than it used to be? Difficult.
It's not. No, I mean, we were skillful on poor pitches. You know, we had to be. And we trained on them. But now, I mean, the pitches are perfect. And like billiard tables, you know, I mean, I remember Alan Ball saying to me, you know, Wembley was the only one that was like a billiard table. And he went down to play for England and there was a lad called Blockley playing for Coventry. And he got his cap for England and he says, I never thought I'd see someone stub his toe at Wembley. Jeff Blockley, I think it was, a centre-half. He said, because it was so perfect, the pitch. You know, but, I mean, you know, if you stub your toe nowadays, I mean, you know, you're not a player. But I mean, we got away with it. With, you know, you're knee deep in mud at times, you know.
And do you watch those old videos? Do you, you get the DVDs out, the videos of the glory days of Everton in the 80s?
No, I don't, to be honest. No, I don't. You know, my memory is such that, no, I remember them. I don't need to reminisce. I do remember them.